Hi, I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm Kylie from Empowering Lives, and one I wanted to introduce my first guest that I've never done this before is Lois Letchford, and she has written the most amazing book. It's called Reverse, a memoir. I came across this book, I'm not sure how, but I read it within 24 hours. I laughed, I cried, I felt like we had a very similar journey in that we had both lived in Brisbane and lived overseas and been in England and both have a child that in grade one we were told not a very good outcome. And so I just really wanted to bring Lois along and for her to share her journey with us today, because it's just a phenomenal story, and I want to give parents out there hope that whatever your child's diagnosis has been, that doesn't have to be the end case, that it's not how they start, it's how they finish the journey. And so welcome, Lois. I just want to welcome you. And I just want you to share your journey with us.
Thank you, Kylie. I am delighted to be here from upstate New York, where it's spring and still freezing cold. Terrible. But anyway, we're here. Isaac, can I just let me switch on a light? I should have done that beforehand. That'll help too. Oh, very good. Yes, so I'm here. I'm delighted to be here.
Excellent. So share us your journey, and I've read your book, and I've bought your book as presents and have given them out. It's and the books that I have lent to people as well, because I have one in the center with us. They've all just been blown away and have been really touched by your story and have given them hope. And so I just want you to share your journey and help us who are still on this journey with our children.
My journey started in 1994 when my second son Nicholas failed first grade. That's when everything hit the fan. Now you say rude words, don't you? And it was the teacher took 1 week to say, well, so far behind, he can't do a single thing. Every other child is learning and he just zones out. I really can't go into how disappointed I am with the school's response for that whole year. The teacher shouted at him every day. He bit his fingernails, he wet his pants, and I dressed him for school. And I sent him to school every single day. And no one said, this shouldn't be happening. Take him out. Let's find an alternative. And it was traumatic, traumatic. So the end of the year, we get tested, we go through an IQ test, and of course it's disastrous. In fact, he shut down and he could read 10 words. He has no strengths, no spatial awareness, and a low IQ. And thankfully, my husband is a professor and he could take that low IQ and say, it's a lower bound. He can look like that on any given day. And I think that gave me a little bit of strength and hope. However, we went on to second grade for many reasons, and we had a wonderful teacher in second grade. And during that first week, she sent him home spelling words, and I'll never forget it. Nicholas coming to me, my quiet little boy, and he said, can you help me with my spelling words? Of course I can, Nicholas. And I said, now let's just go and write them out. And we got paper and pen, and the first word is cat. And he sat at the table, he put his arm on the paper, he held his pencil, and then he just stopped. And he just wouldn't go up, and everything is tense. And thankfully, you could see him trying so hard. I said, let's go and write it in clay. Let's do something else. That boy worked for 90 minutes to come up and over the course of the week to learn 10 spelling words. He worked so hard. 4 nights a week we did it, and then on Thursday night he did it orally. He wrote it and did it orally. Friday morning he did it orally. And then the first spelling test he did, he actually didn't do very well on. But every week after that, he got better and better and better and better. And that was a huge bonus. And then, as I said, my husband's a professor and he had study leave in Oxford, and I decided to take Nicholas on myself at home. And, when we were first there, we arrive and it's summer holidays for England. So then I had my three sons at home. So Nicholas didn't work then. Come a couple months later, the eldest one goes to school, the youngest one goes to kindergarten, and then I had time with Nicholas on his own. And I needed that time in the quiet. And I had these books called Success for All. Boy, don't you hate titles like that?
Yes.
It should turn you off. I don't know what all means. Because he failed. And yes. Then I was getting upset with him because he couldn't do what was expected. And thankfully, my mother-in-law was with me. And she heard me getting frustrated. And she said, Lois, put it away and make learning fun. And that was transformative. Because I'm there with a blank slate. What can I do? What do I have to do? And I just simply started to write poems for him. Because, and then with the rhyming, these tiny little poems, I'm reading to him. And he's going, oh, this is all right. And then we can hear the rhyming words. You're saying the poem. And then you do the illustrations. Yeah. Fantastic. And every day we just did more and more and more and more. One lady spoke to me in Oxford. We were there for 6 months. And she said, what's happened to Nicholas? And I said, well, you know, he's got a problem. And she said, I've got some books that I'd like you to see. And her books were the See It, Hear It, Say It, Do It ones, which helped me teach him to decode. And that the learning of the consonants and the consonant blends in particular and the digraphs, the TH, the SH and the CH, took forever. But it doesn't matter that it took forever. What matters is he got it.
Absolutely.
And that was transformative. So every day we're doing the poems, we're doing the decoding, and then the poetry really started to take on a life of its own because I wrote about Captain Cook. And it was, you know, writing about Captain Cook, Captain with the double O's, Captain Cook had a notion there's a gap in the map in the Great Big Ocean. He took a look without the help of any book, hoping to find a quiet little nook. And as we're doing this, you know, I'm saying it and saying it, and it's only when we saw a globe from 1550, I looked at Nicholas and said, look, Nicholas, there's a gap in the map. And that set both of us on a search. How much knowledge did Cook have when he left England? And then Nicholas starts to ask questions. He said, who came before Captain Cook? And I thought, oh, that was Christopher Columbus, Nicholas. And then he said, and who came before Columbus? Now, if you want a question to blow me away, I had never even thought, you know, you get this mindset, Columbus is the first, end of story.
Yeah.
The first that we know of. And when he starts doing that, it just blew my mind. And that's when I thought, this child does not have a low IQ. Mm. And we saw the maps that Columbus built his journey on, and teaching went from being, this is horrific, to how exciting is this? Mm. How much fun can we have? Mm. Mm. And just the change in Nicholas, you know, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Anyway, 6 months later, January 1996, we're back in Australia, we go to school. I meet the school diagnostician. You call them counsellors there. I've travelled too much, so I never quite know which name to use. I meet her, and because I'm excited, I was worried about Nicholas. I was worried about him going back because he wasn't reading. I knew that, but I could see the spark of the imagination. And I just happened to pass the door and said, you know, we've had such a wonderful time in England. Well, I've spoken to the reading teacher, she said, and he's gone backwards.
Oh, no.
And then I said, oh, I, you know, he asked to see Captain Cook's original maps. And she literally did put her hands on her hips and say, well, he's the worst child I've seen in 20 years of teaching.
Oh,
I went home and I was so distressed. I went and visited a neighbour and then went back and I, to be able to respond to her, I needed to have the 6 months in Oxford. Without that, I wouldn't have had a leg to stand on.
Yeah.
So I went back and I said to her, you can call him whatever you like, but if he is the worst child you've seen in 20 years of teaching, don't expect him to learn like everyone else. Mm-hmm. And that was a critical moment. That night, he comes home with his 10 sight words. Now, the reading teacher, I think I was the least impressed with of all the teachers he came across with. She sends him home 10 sight words and she gives him the word saw, and she gives two sentences. I saw a cat climb up a tree and I saw a man rob a bank. And this is the everything I do when I ask teachers, what's wrong with those sentences? And they look at me blankly. Very few can say to me, the word saw has got four meanings. She has given one. He's got a developmental delay problem. He's cutting the cat. He's not seeing the abstract. And why is he cutting the cat? Because no one's taught him. This is what happens when you speak language. This is what happens when you write. And that put me, you know, the combination now of this kid is smart. He's got a significant language problem. The teaching, sorry, was appalling.
Yeah.
Only word for it. And then when I went, because of that, I went back and did my studies. And I came across this academic paper called Beyond the Deficit Theory. And what did Brian Campbell say? He's an Australian professor. He said, when children don't learn to read, we have a label. We call them dyslexic, da-da-da, you name it, it's all there. And then there's really poor teaching. That's what happened to Nicholas. And that's the one that got me going. From there, Nicholas did learn to read. So that's the big bulk of the story.
Oh, there's something that you said, and I guess, you know, I've been on the journey with my own, well, two of my children, actually. My youngest son did prep twice and struggled with reading and remembering sight words and reading backwards. He would read was as saw, and, you know, I started to think there was some form of dyslexia there. And when you've got a kid who's six and highly anxious and not wanting to go to school, I took him out and homeschooled him, and he did arithmetic as well as homeschooling, and he has nearly caught up to his age. But it was like making it fun. And I loved in your book how you made the poems, and I loved in the book how, so I didn't have clay because he loves dirt. If I had a whiteboard with magnetic numbers, letters, and we spelt the words out like that. So I took some of your, what was in your book, to go, okay, yeah, I need to back off here and I need this to be fun because I want you to be a lifelong learner.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, yeah, I loved those ideas of what you, and then trying to get set up a space that we sit and we read and it's fun. It's not torturous for them.
Yes.
And so, I have my own journey with my daughter was different, but with my younger son. And so when I read your book and I thought you had fabulous ideas, and I then went, okay, I've got to take a back step here and make learning fun for him. And it's been a slow progress, but I think all kids learn differently and you've got to find what works for them and what is going to engage them. And, so I really loved the poems. We love England, so we love the Oxford and all the maps and everything that was in your book. So, that was something that I really picked up.
Yeah. Well, that 6 months in Oxford, you know, I think about what would have happened had we not been there. Yeah. And I can't even go there because it's too stressful.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everything had to line up. My mother-in-law's words right at that time to say, make it fun, to push me to do something different was critical.
Yeah.
You know, and then at Oxford in England, the ability to get around and see things was phenomenal. And that made a difference too.
Mm.
Access to artifacts. And learning moved from our classroom to absolutely everywhere.
Mm.
And one of my friends read my book and she said, Lois, you made the learning sound far too easy. I remember you just being so stressed over all of it. And I thought, you're right. You're right. But you can only do every day. And I think if I did it again, I would be more relaxed. Yeah. Now he's now 32. So, you know, we're talking 25, whatever number of years it is.
Yeah.
And we have been successful. But it's still a daily journey. And you never quite know what's going to happen. But I would be more relaxed. And maybe if we think, put something up on our wall, PhD. He's going to get it.
Yeah.
He's going to get it.
Yeah.
It'll be all right. And tell ourselves that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If there's one thing that from where I currently am is yet to make it more fun and to relax more because, I mean, we've worked incredibly hard, but to enjoy it a bit more and not to feel worried about the future because they do get there. And they get there in their own time and not robbing them of the joy of learning. So continue to tell us the rest of your story because what the outcome is what totally blew my mind and gave me hope because we're still on this journey and gave me hope of like, yeah, I know that my child is bright and I know that she could do whatever she wants. So just you can continue because the outcome was amazing.
Well, Nicholas learned to read independently by the time he was 7.5. So that was really good. But he's, and then by the 7.5 to age 11, he's making 1 year's growth in a year, which is pretty good. But, the curves takes a long time to pick up.
Yeah.
And then when we were 11, the things changed in Australia at the university. And my husband came home one day and said, it's only 33 years until retirement. I thought we can't stay, sadly. And he was offered a position in this place called Lubbock, Texas. And Lubbock, Texas looks like the dirt floor of the world, flat and brown and boring. And we went, and again, you don't know what's going to happen. And Nicholas was reading on a third grade reading level and he's in fifth grade.
Yeah.
Going to Lubbock, Texas, the first thing that happens, we meet the principal and she says, I think you should repeat and do fourth grade. And my husband said, won't he be old when he graduates from high school? I said, yes, that'll be a problem. We've got this class that does grade 7, 8, and 9 in 2 years. Yeah. What school system does that for you?
Yeah.
And that's what happened. That was the first thing that happened. And now because Nicholas wasn't back a year, he wasn't struggling as much as you would have been in fifth grade.
Yeah.
They had a reading program that he bought into and he starts to read, 2 hours a night, 5 and 6 nights a week to read one Goosebumps book. I mean, his discipline is, just blows me away.
Yeah.
And then we bought Connects. He was always a builder, but he wanted more Connects. And we bought these two big Connect sets for him and he started to build. And if you look on my website, I think I've got some of the pictures of Nicholas's building. He did the Eiffel Tower and St. Paul's Cathedral, phenomenal size, and he became the star of the school.
Well, I did see that in your book and I bought some for my younger son.
Yes.
He loves building. And I went, oh, this is great. He's always building something. He just built a flagpole out of wood in the backyard while we're in lockdown. But after your book, he loves it. He loves it. Yes.
And the ability to build big things with it. And you don't need so many pieces. Legos, the pieces are too small.
Yeah.
And then they've got too specific. But Connects is the bigger pieces and you can reuse them. And what it does for the brain is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And he'd come home and do maths work and then he'd go and build it with Connects. So he's getting it on multiple levels. And really that was the position, being in Lubbock propelled him from the bottom to the top.
Wow.
You know, when you write a book, sometimes you tweak things.
Yeah.
I didn't tweak much in that book at all because he left elementary school, primary school at the end of grade 6 and went into 7th grade to do this grade 7, 8 and 9. And he said, I think I'm pretty good at maths. I'd like to take this advanced placement class. And it was the first period 1 of a brand new school. And because he was going to do the 7, 8 and 9 in 2 years, he wasn't with any of his peers. Brand new school, brand new teachers, doesn't know anyone. And the first class is pre-AP maths. And the teacher asked him to write his parents' name on an index card in block letters, lower this case, you know, do this, do that, do the other, and he froze. She tore up his work, she threw it away, she yelled at him and said, if you can't do this class in maths, you'll never do anything in mathematics. And that night he just came home and cried. He told me about it and he cried. Then the story gets worse than that, really. He lasted a week in that class because, to me, I could see his face as I dropped him off at school. The blood just dropped. And I just went in at the end of Friday and said, he's not doing this class. Don't care. We're going to find a way around it. And he took his time. He didn't do that class. We did the other maths classes. It all worked. Didn't bother him. And then he went on to high school. By the time he's in high school, he's up with his peers. He's out of special education and he starts taking math, high level maths classes. And when he's in these high level maths classes, he has some fantastic teachers who see his strengths. He had incredible English teachers. High school was a breeze. He was in the swim team. He had, high school in America is really hard. You've got to find a place because there's 3,000 or something kids in the one place. And he was on the swim team. So you've got a group of friends all the time.
Yeah.
And that made a huge difference. He graduated in the top 20% of his class.
Wow.
Took out prizes in, I don't know, Latin and geography. I've forgotten now, but, you know. And then he won the Yes I Can Award from Exceptional Children for academics. You know, because it was so unexpected.
I mean, sometimes I think of when my daughter goes across the stage to get her degree, I should be up there with her because you've been on this journey. Like, you feel like you're graduating with them. But did you feel overwhelmed with emotion when he won these awards of how the long journey that you've been on and you've seen how hard he's worked and how far he's come?
You know, from then... Once he got to middle school, he was really independent of me.
Yeah.
And it's a village.
Yeah.
It takes the village to, and someone outside of the school to see his strength.
Yeah.
We in middle school, he had this science, you know, he failed that maths class and he started to do engineering, some sort of engineering, robotics. And his wonderful teacher said, Nicholas, why aren't you in my advanced placement science class? I like the way you think. Everyone needed that. And she took over and I am so grateful for her because that was a huge component of someone else sees you're smart.
Mm.
And then once we got that, then the rest is just a relief.
Yeah.
A relief. And his teaching in the, you know, in high school was phenomenal.
Wow.
And they, you know, then compounding the story, at the end of high school, my husband took a job back in Tasmania. If you want to go to university, go to a small school. Nicholas starts in engineering and the engineering and maths people work together and he just does more and more mathematics, more and more and more mathematics until in the end he takes 5.5 years to do 2 degrees, but he's got an honours degree in engineering and an honours degree in mathematics. And I remember him saying to me, I sit with Larry Forbes. Larry Forbes is his favourite professor in mathematics. All of the professors in maths were phenomenal. And he said, I sit right in the front. And the other thing is he's doing honours levels maths. There's half a dozen kids in the class. And now it's a little hothouse. They just grow. And, you know, the ideas are phenomenal. Wow. And it was, so if you go to a university, I don't know what's happened since we've left, but for Nicholas, it was just amazing.
Wow.
We had him retested in 2011 to get support for writing these honours thesis that he had to write. No one's available to write it, to help him write it. A professor steps up and does it.
Wow.
You know, it.
Amazing.
The best experience possible.
Yeah.
So, you know, and in the end you think, oh, well, it's over, finished.
Yeah.
What's he going to do next? And he was looking around, you know, The drive of Nicholas was astounding. He stayed in college for a couple of years, and I remember in his room, he had on the wall, honours, thesis, PhD. And he had it on his wall and on his ceiling. Honours, thesis, PhD. And I'm thinking, you're looking for a PhD. He starts looking around and he finds a scholarship in England. And there are two. There's one from Oxford and there's one from Cambridge. The Oxford one comes up first and he got it.
Wow.
Yeah, he got the scholarship. And this is more amazing. When we were in Oxford, and I think you would have known this from the book, when we were in Oxford, we lived in Abingdon, which is south of Oxford, and we'd catch number 34 bus in and out to the city. The number 34 bus stops outside of Christchurch. And we could never go in. And Christchurch is, you know, an old college, and it's got this huge quad in the middle, biggest quad in the place. And you just look under this Tom Tower arch and look at it.
Yeah.
When Nicholas gets a scholarship to go to Oxford, it's at Christchurch.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. You've done a full circle.
It's done full circle. Yes. Yeah. Wow. And that wasn't without incident. You know, it went, the journey was up and down. So they have to do an oral exam, and Nicholas has significant auditory processing difficulties. So when you say something, it takes him a while to spit the answer out. And in England, everything is an oral exam on top of the thesis. Because we had the testing done in Australia to say he had a problem, he got support to do that. Not to do the exam, but support to prepare for the exam.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would have worried about it. He won't get through it. Yeah. But with the support, you learn to ask the questions, you learn to say, is this what you mean? Da, da, da. Then you can answer the question. And it's amazing. And I think it set him up for life.
Yeah.
And then in 2018, we are now back in the United States. Nicholas is in England and our eldest son is in Austin. We arrive in England on the Friday. Nicholas is going to graduate on Saturday, and my mother-in-law died the night before he graduated.
Oh, no.
She was such a force in our lives. You know, she had MS. She couldn't do a lot of things, but she was such a support. And then she died the night before he graduated. And poor Chris, you know, he said, got a text from his sister saying, Mum's died. One tear went down. We've got Nicholas's graduation. We've got to deal with that. But we were there, and so we had a graduation.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we went around the city because they had been with us and took little videos and sent it back for her funeral.
Yeah. And so you graduated with it was a doctorate of applied mathematics, was it?
Yes. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And what does he do now, Lois?
After that, there were a few more humps and a few more bumps. Life is never simple and it's never straightforward. However, after his PhD, he completed a master's degree in health economics.
Oh, wow.
He is working for Oxford Policy Management, which, don't ask me what they do, I don't know. But he's now at the forefront of coronavirus modelling.
Wow.
Yeah. He's with a team in Oxford with his company sorting out, here are these mathematical models and what they're adjusted on. That's what Nicholas is doing.
I find that incredible because right back when he was six, what the teacher said, and how if you hadn't fought for him and that mother's love and that mother's belief of what he's now doing for our world, not just for a country, but for the world. And how if he had been written off, and I guess that's what I really want to parents understand, is that, you know, this diagnosis they get in grade one is not the end story, doesn't have to be the end story, that it is through hard work, and it's through the ups and downs, and it's through the many tears. And I mean, when I read your book, I cried with you when the teacher said that, and I laughed with you in some of the, and you know, and when you said about that sore, you know, I had never seen it like that, but once you mentioned it, oh yes, that makes it, because to us it just comes naturally. It was like, how do you teach someone who doesn't understand maths or understand numbers? It's very hard. And so, yeah, that blows my mind, and that gives me, it's like, wow, we're still on this journey. I've still got three younger kids, so they're teenage down to 9. But knowing that the future, if we keep working on this journey, the future that is going to be bright for them.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you've got to hold that hope. You've got every day, just do that. And you don't have to worry about where they go or what they do. Enjoy today.
Yeah. And enjoy, I think, today. Some days, you know, that hope is faint.
Very small.
I feel like it's nearly out. But then, and I think in my review that I wrote on Amazon, because I don't normally write reviews, but I was very touched by your story and very thankful that you shared your story, because it's a personal one, and thankful that Nicholas let you share your story, because it gives hope for those who are coming behind you. Mm-hmm. And I think it was really showing that the impossible can be possible. It's moving those mountains with the hope and the determination and the love is what moves mountains. And so that's what I really felt through your book, is that, and now you've gone on to now help other kids. It wasn't just a journey that started out helping Nicholas. You now help many other kids to learn how to read, don't you?
Yeah. When I was in Lubbock, the first mother I met, one of the mothers I met, her 13-year-old son was non-reading and spent 4 years in a phonics-only reading program. And she, you know, I taught him over the summer. He worked really hard, you know, about 9 weeks out of the 12, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. And at the end of the summer, she said, he's done more with you in this time than he's done in all of his years of schooling. And that was true. And at the end of summer, she wrote to the school district and said, you employ this woman or I sue you. I got employed. I couldn't put that in the book, but I can say it. And with that, I then met other children who were behind, and it was just amazing to have the ability to change the teaching. And what drives me was how much fun teaching became.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the saddest thing is we try and confine teaching to testing, and we shouldn't.
Yeah. I feel like my two boys have learnt more in the last month, because they've been outside and they wanted to make a go-kart. And so I said, well, you go research it. And they've been outside and they've failed. And they've come in and they've said, I'm not doing it anymore. And I said, okay, but, you know, maybe give it a go again tomorrow and learn. And so each day they came in, each day they were giving up, and each day they went back out again. And I think they have learnt more about perseverance, because we can't go anywhere. And two, problem solving, and three, finding materials around the house and learning of how you can put that together. I mean, we did end up going to Bunnings and buying some stuff that we needed, but then they worked all day Saturday with their father, and they've built this go-kart, and now they love it. So that sense of, and they're going, we've got a bit of a hill, so they're going down the hill together, and, you know, like cool runnings, and one's got snow goggles on and, you know, a baseball helmet on because my middle son. But I feel like they have learnt more in the last week of being outside, problem solving, having to, giving up, and then going back to it rather than just reading in a book. And my kids have I've sent them outside, and I have gone, learn outside.
Have you read the book Why?
No, I haven't.
Why by Mario Livio. I listened to it rather than read it. I found it easier to listen to. First bit's a bit dull. But it's about curiosity.
Yeah.
And it's about how curiosity changes the brain. It's pain-free. When you make mistakes, you remember more and you actually pick up more information. And it's exactly what I did with Nicholas.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's the way we should be teaching.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, it's a phenomenal book. Well, it's not a phenomenal book, but it really taps into our children.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I might give that a read. Well, I just want to, so where can people buy? So I just want to let people go and know again, this book, Reverse, a memoir. Where can they buy your book? Because I absolutely loved it. Loved it. When I get a book, I love reading people's journeys. I don't get much time to read. I'm always reading about the brain or, you know, how I can help my kids learn. Your book, I read till 3 a.m. I just couldn't. I started and I just didn't. I just told everyone to keep themselves alive for that day, and because I couldn't put it down. And I just wanted, you know, parents be able to get hold of your book and read it and get that hope and, yeah, just to see what you've done with Nicholas and, so where could they get a copy? I bought it off Amazon's.
Yes, that's the easiest because it's not a totally self-published book. I went through a company and I had to pay for the publishing. So the easiest place is Amazon. Sadly. If you ask for it through a book agent, it would cost you a fortune and take a while.
Yeah.
So okay. Unfortunately, we're supporting multinationals, but I don't have a lot of choice.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you for promoting it because it's fantastic. You know, I share my story because it's like I told you earlier, it's a Helen Keller story. It's a modern day Helen Keller story. No expectations, no clue. And I asked Nicholas when I was with him for a while, I said, Nicholas, tell me what happened in first grade. My son cried. His tongue went round and round in his mouth. And he couldn't put a word out. I spoke to Shay Whistle in Melbourne. Nicholas and I spoke to her on a podcast. And I said about my journey. And she said, Nicholas, how does that make you feel? And he said, oh, that happened to someone else. That didn't happen to me. That's trauma. And he has been traumatized by that first year of school. And he's just locked it away in his brain and shut the door and never wants to open it. And we'll have to deal with that one day. But never should children be traumatized from going to school. But we are. Mm, mm, mm.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think your book's wonderful. I think that, every teacher should read it. I think every teacher should read it. It should be as part of a reading in with our education degrees. I want to thank you for your time and sharing your story. And I want to thank you for your bravery for writing your story and for Nicholas, because it is a personal journey, but for giving the rest of us who are still on this journey or coming on this journey hope, especially for kids with dyslexia. And so thank you for your time, and I hope it warms up over there for you. We're just about to head into winter, but it was still like 30 degrees the other day.
I just want to give you a huge hug because it's fantastic. The people are saying, I love your book, and I couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
What I love most. I couldn't, and my father said that. I couldn't put it down.
Yeah, I loved it. And so, I hope we keep in contact, and if we're ever over your way, we might pop in and have a cup of coffee.
Definitely. We might be able to visit one day.
Yes, I know, because we were going to meet in person in May, weren't we?
And then that's
this is great. Technology is great, and we can do this. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Kylie.